This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Western Rookie Hunting Podcast. My name is Dan Johnson, and I'm your host. And this also might be played on the Hunting Gear Podcast because technically we're going to be talking a lot about Onyx today. We're going to be talking about e-scouting. We're going to be talking about digital maps, some of the tips and tricks and tactics to using that piece of quote unquote hunting gear in order to, it's a digital application, but using it to get better at what it is that we're all trying to do. And that's put animals down on the ground when we go on our hunts. So today's guest, Dylan Dowson from Onyx. Dylan, how we doing, man?
Doing great. Doing really good. It's we were just talking before start here, but it's the chaos before the season opener where life is ramping up. Kiddos are busy, family's busy. We're trying to get in, squeeze in the last bit of summer, whether it be lake time or whatever. And then also work-wise, trying to get everything prepped so that when September hits and the bulls are bugling, can press play on work and go out and enjoy the outdoors and hopefully fill a few tags. It's shaping up to be a really good season, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. It's funny. We are a baseball family during the summer, right? So we dedicate pretty much all summer to baseball. And then as soon as we get to, last weekend was our last tournament, our last baseball tournament. And now we are trying to fit in three, before school starts, we have 3 weeks and we're going to try to fit in three vacations into 3 weeks before school starts. And that is also with balancing football, balancing fall baseball, balancing wrestling and flag football. It is. And then trying to find time to get out there, scout and hunt and fit, adjust tree stands and make my way to the West. It's, it gets trickier and trickier every year.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't say I'm on vacation cause I am working this week, but we're in Eastern Montana right now where I grew up, seeing some family and kind of taking a week over here before we head back home. But to your point though, that's where, to kind of jump in before we jump in, that's kind of where the e-scouting and the maps come really in handy. Because as life gets busy and you might not be able to drive three states across to go check out that Colorado tag you drew, get boots on the ground, you can e-scout it. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. So, life is good and busy and I love it. And the fall is going to be a great hunting season.
Yep. All right. So remind me again where Onyx is located. Like, where's your guys' HQ?
Yeah, so Onyx was founded in Missoula, Montana. That's Western Montana. We currently have offices in Missoula, Montana, Bozeman, Montana. We've got a lot of folks there as well, which is about 2.5-3 hours down the road from us. And then we've got a ton of remote workers as well. So, I mean, as I said, I'm all the way across the state. I'm 8 hours from home right now, and I'm working from my dad's place here. So, that's one of the nice things about the digital product and the nature of Onyx is we can kind of work from wherever. So we've got those kind of main headquarters in Missoula, Bozeman, but a lot of remote folks as well.
Gotcha. Cool. Cool. How many people work for Onyx, would you say?
A lot. It's so when I first started, which was, we're like 2 weeks away from 10 years, which is crazy when I say that out loud. But when I first started at Onyx, there was like 30 people that worked there. It was founded in 2009 and I started in 2015. So, I mean, some time had gone by and it was really ramping up to be a very popular, well-known, successful company around the time I started. And that's nationwide, right? Like that's not just Montana. It originally was found in Montana. Then we had, the data for, I think, the surrounding states. It was like Idaho, Wyoming, And then it just kind of spread from there. Now it's all 50 states plus Canada. But yeah, so when I started, it was a relatively smaller company. And now, you know, to be completely honest, I don't even know the number of employees, but yeah, north of 400 or 500 plus. Lots of different folks at work at Onyx now, which is really cool. And then obviously, like, Onyx Hunt is where I work, but we also have Onyx Off-Road, Onyx Backcountry, now Onyx Fish as well in a few states and expanding. So yeah, it's been a pretty wild 10 years to see the growth and trajectory of Onyx.
Yeah, I knew that Onyx was growing and had continued to grow. I was just kind of curious what the how many people were now working for it, because I think when you guys first came out, there was like 10 people, maybe even less. Started less, you know, yeah, kick this whole thing off.
Really, so Onyx was founded at the time. It was Hunting GPS Maps was the name of it, and Eric Siegfried is the founder. I know Eric really well. I've hunted with him a few times. Just spent the 4th of July with him and his family. And yeah, just Eric, essentially, when he founded Onyx, he moved from Eastern Montana, where I'm originally from, close by, to Western Montana. And when he moved to Missoula, he just couldn't know exactly where he could go, right? You've got all these paper maps, and then it's like, okay, there's public land up this drainage, but then you get up there and you're like, have I crossed the border of public, or am I still on private? So then you're looking at the paper map, trying to figure out where the heck you're at on the paper map. And essentially what Eric did was he built a product for himself, just to solve his own personal problems. So he went and got all of the data records, found a way to digitize that data, and then make it format with an SD card that would plug into a GPS unit. So then, you know, it, like Onyx today on your phones, but at the time it was a Garmin GPS handheld unit, you could see your location and say, okay, I just crossed over to state land, I just crossed over to national forest, now I can park my pickup and go hike up and try and find elk. So he essentially just created it for himself, and then in doing so realized, like, hey, I've got something pretty cool here that is incredibly valuable. And it was him and a couple other folks, and essentially they were making chips in their basement and meeting up with people in Sportsman Warehouse parking lots to sell them chips at the time. So a lot has changed since then.
Just some shady type shit. Hey, dude, meet me in the parking lot after dark, and I'll be there.
Yep. Some slinging chips out of the trunk of their car.
There you go. Hey, and look where you guys are at today. How many? Out of curiosity, how many users do you guys have? Do you know that number?
Yeah, it's a big one. It's not one that I can publicly say. But I mean, what we always default on is we've got millions of Onyx users. I mean, it's pretty crazy, especially the Western states. You know, I specialize in Western big game marketing. We also have whitetail folks and waterfowl folks and upland folks. But yeah, it's a very big number, and a lot of folks out there are using it, from all the way from game wardens to, you know, somebody who might hunt for one weekend out of the year, right? You kind of get to a point where, especially as all these laws in different states and everything change, once you use it one time, it's kind of one of those things, right? If you're going to go hunting and you need your orange, you need a rifle, and you need Onyx. And that's not meant to come across as a sales pitch. It's just one of those tools that once you use it, it's really difficult to go out there and try to navigate and not have it in your pocket.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Everybody was, I'm sitting here and I have these conversations every year about people reach out to me and they're like, hey, what kind of boots should I get? What kind of this should I get? What kind of that? And we're past that now, because I think everybody knows of you guys. But initially I was like, the first thing you need to do is get a subscription to Onyx or some type of digital mapping app that tells you where you're at exactly and what public and private land borders are. And then from there, that just opens up everything for you, knowing where you can and where you can't go, knowing what access routes you can take versus what you can't, what roads are open maybe or closed maybe. And we'll have that discussion here in a little bit, but it's just a huge door that opens that allows, because my first hunt I went on in 2004. 2014, I did not have Onyx, and I was relying on paper maps and plat books to know what sections were owned by who, what fence lines were crossing. And that was a son of a bitch, man.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I hear my dad talking of like, oh, back in the day, you know, we just kind of went wherever we thought was right. And I think there was a little bit more grace maybe then, because people just didn't know and that data wasn't easily accessible. So I think maybe there was a little bit more leeway of, well, I tried to stay on that state section and I happened to wander off of it because there was no fence on the east side of it, right?
Yeah.
Now, with today's technology and everybody having one of these in their pockets with that data accessible, there's really no excuse anymore, right? You can't,
right.
You can no longer, and I'm not saying people got away with like, oh, I just didn't know, so I did whatever I wanted. But at the same time, there's a little bit more leeway and it's like, okay, don't try to break the law and you'll be in good shape. But now I know if I take two more steps in front of me, I'm on private property and there's no fences. There's no, you know, boundary lines saying private, stay out. Like, I just know based on our maps and the layer and that particular tree, you know, that I'm looking at right in front of me, that's, you know, 5 yards in front of me, that tree based on my map with the boundary and my GPS location is definitely on private. So
yeah,
there's no more excuses anymore to not be, you know, legal.
Yeah. Let's talk about the benefits, and I'm going to say near and far. All right. I want to talk about the benefits of a digital map or a good mapping app. And you can talk about Onyx and relate it back to Onyx if you want. But whether you're 24 hours away from where you plan on hunting, or you are on the spot right now where you're hunting, what are the benefits of having a digital map in your pocket at all times with the intel that borders, property owners, boundaries, all that stuff, layers?
Yeah. And it's one of those things, you're going to use the same maps, the same platform, whether you're 24 hours away or you're on the spot right now trying to figure out how to make the next move. It's just different features and different uses within the map itself, right? So for the 24 hours away, you know, you live on the East Coast, but you drew, you know, that Wyoming elk tag, right? You've been dreaming about hunting elk your entire life. You finally, you know, had enough points, you cashed them in, you're going elk hunting in Wyoming. You might not be able to go, you know, make any trips, probably, boots on the ground in that particular unit or the area that you're going to go hunting ahead of time. But with a platform like Onyx or digital maps, you can e-scout that area and get very familiar with that country. So you show up with a plan and not just show up in the dark and be like, I don't know what it's going to look like around me. Is there timber? Is this elk country? Like, I just, you know, I'm in a random spot. So the difference there with like, okay, you're a long ways away from the place you're going to hunt, how I'm going to use those maps is obviously if you draw a specific unit, I'm going to start e-scouting that unit, which that's a whole separate conversation, right? We have tools and draw odds and everything for application season to pinpoint what unit you want to apply for, what tag you want to apply for. Let's just say, for example, like
we're past all that now.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Like you've drawn your tag, so you know where you can hunt. But there are certain states like Montana or Wyoming where if you get a general tag, I'm hunting a general elk tag in Wyoming this year, so I can hunt general west, which is a relatively new thing. They broke it out into three different regions, but I can hunt a giant portion of units, right? Like it's not one particular unit I can hunt. I can hunt a lot of different ones. So anyways, you have your tag at this point and you're not in the area. So what I'm going to do if I'm e-scouting, trying to get familiar with that area and figure out where I'm going to go and start to build different plans, like plan A, plan B, plan C, etc., is I'm going to look at what is available. So let's say for this case, like you've got one specific unit you drew, you can hunt unit X. I'm going to look at that unit. I might even use like our area shape tool and highlight around that unit just so I can quickly visually see what that unit is and then see the access points, right? So within that unit, I'm going to go into layers and I'm going to turn on, make sure A, that state is turned on. So if you know, don't live in that particular state, you have to go select Wyoming, turn those layers on. And then from there, you can turn on private public land. the GMUs, and then also make sure it's within the same species. So if you draw an elk one, an elk tag, you need to go to the game management units and make sure elk units are showing and not, you know, antelope, because they might be different in that state. Yeah. So once you've done all that, essentially I'm going to, from a high level standpoint, cruise around that unit on the maps, and you can go about it a bunch of different ways. And that's what's cool, is I might e-scout completely different than you and completely different than the other guys we're going hunting with. But essentially the first thing I'm doing is I'm looking for anywhere that looks like a public road, which we'll get into in a second, intersects either state land, BLM land, or national forest land. So public land where a public road intersects it. And that can mean, okay, there's a giant swath of national forest and there's a highway and a road system that goes right through it. So anywhere on that road system, I could branch off and go hunting, set camp, etc., all the way down to, I'll zoom in very fine on a piece of state land or national forest, whatever it is. And what I really look for a lot of times is where a road barely intersects it, like where it might just cut right across the corner of it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks who don't have a tool like this are going to drive right by that public land and not know that you can pull over there. And there might even be, I've hunted some public land like that where you have literally a car's width where you can pull off that county road and park right there and then take off hiking, and it opens up a ton of different land, right? So what I'm doing at that point is I'm marking different access points. So you'll find an access point. I'll add a waypoint at that particular spot. I name it access. So there's a custom waypoint with an A on it for access. So I'll choose that one. And then I personally put them all yellow. If it's a spot that I've never been to, I haven't confirmed it, I don't know if it's good or bad or, you know, possible, but I've e-scouted it, for me anyways, it's yellow. That tells me I've never been there, but I've e-scouted it. Once I go confirm that, I will change the color, whether it be to red or if it's a water source in blue or whatever. So there's so many different ways you can go about it, but that's kind of how I generally start. I start looking for public access.
So that's, and I start first
marking those.
Yep. So that's the first thing. So like you narrow down an area first, and then you go, where are my access routes first? Then you dive into like terrain.
Yep, for okay. sure. Because I mean, at the end of the day, and again, there's a million ways to skin a cat here. You could start looking at terrain of what you want to hunt first, and then look at access. So I mean, as I'm looking at access points, I'm also being a little mindful, right?
Right.
If I'm hunting elk, and half of the unit is antelope country or farmland country, very flat, and you know, just not the areas that probably are going to hold a lot of elk. They will fool you. I've been very successful on elk in areas that you don't think elk are going to live in. But at the end of the day, like when I'm looking for access points, I am looking for access points that are, you know, around areas that I want to look at. So if I want to go in and do a backpack bivy type hunt, for example, I'm probably more so looking at and keying in on and marking access points from like trailheads and areas that I can then get into the more quote unquote backcountry. So a little bit of it is full circle.
Yeah. Okay. Cause I almost do things a little backwards, and I do this like for myself. I look for the terrain first and where I think the animals will live. Then I look for access, but then there's times where I've just wasted however many minutes or hours scouting that particular spot, e-scouting, and then finding out that access could be landlocked, or it's so far back that unless I have an ATV, or maybe it won't even let you have an ATV, right? Then I have to maybe knock on some doors and say, hey, can I pay a trespass fee or something to get back, you know, backdoor this land. But like you said, there's several ways to do it, but I have definitely gotten in trouble before where I've done put a ton of work into finding and putting, oh, this looks like a good spot. This looks like oh shit, I can't get to it because it's 3 miles deep.
Kraft mac and cheese is better than 90s hip hop. We'll remind you of your childhood without making you feel incredibly old. Kraft mac and cheese, best thing ever.
Yeah. And that's where you'll get to a point too that, and you and I definitely do this subconsciously, whether you're looking for access points first or key areas that's going to hold out first, like you're going to subconsciously kind of do both at the same time a little bit. So yeah. As I'm marking access points, I might zoom out and be like, oh, that looks like a really cool ridge system. Looks like it holds water. Like I'm going to come back to that because it looks really elky next to an access point. Right. But to your point there, like absolutely agree. You don't want to spend 3-4 hours e-scouting a particular area and breaking down camps, site locations and wallows. And here's where the elk are going to bed. And here's where the feed are and all this information to find out it's landlocked public land. And the only way you can get to it is with a helicopter. Right. So there's a bit of a give and take with that, but yeah, you'll start to, as you get better at it and as you do it more, you'll definitely start to figure out ways that you're kind of doing both at the same time, right? You're marking access in areas that also look elky, which is a whole separate conversation. And it's one of those things, the more you hunt elk or deer, whatever it is you're after, the more you start to pick up on, okay, this area looks like it will hold elk and here's some access points. And two, like, access points, you can look at a public trailhead where you're going to roll up and there's going to be 3 horse trailers, 5 rigs, and everybody's, you know, maybe going on a trail system from there all the way to the very obscure, you know, again, you've got to pick up length to park here and then you can go hunting and everything in between. And really, I've had success on both of those areas, right? Like I've shot some of my best deer in Montana on like a little quarter section of state land or BLM land that has no fences, nothing indicating that particular section is public or private. It looks private, honestly, because it's surrounded by ag fields, but there's an intersection on the road where you can get to it and you can go hunt this as long as you know where you're at. Now, one deer in particular, I remember that I shot on one of those sections, like, you know, I'm glassing the deer and I'm looking at what trees and what bushes he's by. And then I'm zooming in on the map to make sure he is on public land as well, right? Like I can be on public land, but that animal I'm harvesting also has to be on the public land and, you know, ideally not right on the border, right? Because if you shoot that deer and it runs onto private, like that's not a good situation. So, you know, using things like the compass mode in the app or pulling out the rangefinder and saying, okay, that buck is 225 yards away. You pull out the app and do the line distance tool. And you're like, I've got 285 yards until the private property boundary. So therefore, I know that buck is well within the border. So I know that was a bit of
interesting.
A detailed off tangent there. But my point being is all the way from the trailheads that everybody's going to be parked at, it's going to look like, you know, a Walmart parking lot, all the way down to nobody really knows that this is a public intersection here, so I'm going to park and go hunt and be away from pressure. Like that's, I'm looking at everything in between when I'm first starting just to see what my options are. And then from there, I'm going to dive into, okay, what type of hunt do I want to do? Again, do I want to do a backpack bivy hunt? Well, if that's the case, I'm not really going to be looking at those half a sections of public land, right? I want to get away, you know, several miles and stay in my backpack. B, what terrain does look like it's going to hold elk, and how does that terrain complement the style of hunting that I want to do, right? If I am wanting to call elk in and like hunt during the rut, and I want that experience of calling a bull in, like maybe I'm going to look and e-scout more timbered area where that bull's going to have to commit to come see me, to come find that call, just more susceptible to calling an elk in that country. So from there, you know, I'm looking at the holistic country and the areas that I want to hunt. But for me anyways, it starts with access.
Yeah. You brought something up there. The term looks elky or looks like game would live in these areas. And this is something that I've struggled with probably the most when e-scouting and trying to set expectations for how good my hunts are going to be. And that is e-scouting, getting to a spot that's like, dude, this looks like there's good terrain here. There's water here. Everything looks good. I mark it. I make it a priority location to come check out. And when I get there, it is not at all any of those things. And what the first thing that pops into my head is cattle. And basically just cattle being in there and grazing everything down. And then it's just like, okay, well, obviously there's no deer here if there's hundreds and hundreds of head of cattle. Is there a shortcut or a tip that you found that eliminates that to know, hey, you know, hey, just kind of a heads up, here's something to look for that you might be able to check out that knowing that there's cattle in these pastures?
Not necessarily. There's one thing that comes to mind, but to be completely honest with you, and I've had this happen countless times as well, it's the way of getting around that is not just e-scouting that one particular area that looks like your honey hole. This is where you're going to go kill that big bull or that big buck, right? Like, it's perfect. It's got everything. It's food, water, cover. It looks amazing. And you get there and you're just like, I've spent 2 days here and I haven't heard a bull. I have not seen an elk track that's fresh. There's zero sign. What I have found is that is going to happen still regardless of what you do e-scouting wise. But where you combat that is that's your plan A, but then you have a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, and a plan E that are all within close proximity. So like your plan A and your plan B might be, you know, it still might be a drive away where you got to pull your camp out and drive 30 minutes at night or an hour at night, get to your plan B, but you're not driving halfway across a state and then back to your plan C, right? Like the way to combat that I have found is multiple plans and recognizing quickly, like, hey, there's no elk here right now. It might look like Yellowstone National Park where there should be a ton of animals and, you know, crazy bugling rut fest going on, but it's just not happening here and that's okay. I'm going to pull out and I'm going to go to plan B and then plan C, and eventually you will find them. And who knows, you could go back to that same country the following year and that plan A is loaded with elk and it's the craziest, you know, elk hunting you've ever experienced. Just that particular year at that particular time, for whatever reason, cattle or, you know, hunting pressure or whatever, it's just not happening right there. So that's the best way I found, is just have multiple plans and have the mindset that you can move and it's okay. Especially at night, that's a lot of times when I move, is okay, I hunted all day, you know, either in the middle of the day, I'll be moving to a different spot to check it out, or at night. And then again, if you're elk hunting in September, you can road bugle and check some canyons and see if a bull will respond to you while you're moving. There's been a lot of times where I'm moving to a different spot and just kind of throwing some bugles in a few different canyons. And, you know, you bugle off of drainage, not expecting a whole lot. Three bulls right below the road, you know, 300-400 yards below the road, scream at you. It's like, well, I know where I'm going to hunt tomorrow morning. I'm going to, you know, pull up the maps, figure out where I can camp, where my scent and everything's not going to be in their way. But there's three fired up bulls down there. There's probably a bunch of different elk. And this is now where I'm going to hunt. So the ability to move and be kind of nimble combats that. But the one thing that I can think of is the recent imagery that might give you a little bit of indication, I guess, on what's going on in that area. So if you go to our base maps and then you turn on recent imagery, it will give you like a 2-week window of what the imagery is, what dates the imagery was pulled. Now, I will say right off the bat, recent imagery is not as detailed and crisp and clean and clear as our normal imagery. But what it does do is it gives you a date range. So I just pulled up recent imagery in this area I'm looking at, and it says July 7th through July 21st. So it is now, what, July 29th? So I know that this imagery that I'm looking at was taken somewhere between July 7th and 21st. So everywhere from, it could have been, you know, 8 days ago all the way to, you know, 3 weeks ago. But I know that this imagery I'm looking at is within that date range. And you can go back and forward on this imagery. So you can go back all the way. I mean, like right now I'm looking at January and the area I'm looking at is completely snow covered. So based on this, I can look and say, okay, around March 17th, somewhere in there is when the snow came off. We had one more snowstorm. So you can see what that area is doing. If it's green, if it's brown and dead in that area, you're not going to be able to zoom in real close and like see cattle or see grazing, but you'll get an understanding of the landscape of like, well, this area is really green, or this is when you know, this particular area had a kind of a major change from green lush grass to the more dry dead fall grass that we're used to when we're hunting. So that might give you some indication, but it's not perfect. I think the solution there again is to be flexible, have multiple different plans, and not be afraid to move areas.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say, and this is, take this advice however you want to take it. If you zoom in to, you go to a farm or a ranch or a piece of grasslands or whatever you're hunting, this is more for like mule deer country than it is for elk country. But it's not limited to that. You can zoom in really close and you can see well-used two tracks, like a farmer or a rancher has been in and out of there. And that tells you that the heavier that road appears to be means the more traffic that is on that road. And so for me, anytime I see that, I go, okay, it's being used. So that probably means if it's out west, especially in the Dakotas or eastern Montana or eastern Wyoming, that's going to indicate some type of agriculture that's happening there, probably cattle. And mm-hmm. And then the other thing is just zooming in around water holes or cattle tanks, and you can literally see cattle on the thing. And then from there, it's just like, okay, if it looks good and there's cattle in it, it might not be as good as I think. Okay, let's check the surrounding areas, and maybe there's a fence that's blocking them from getting into a deep drainage or something like that. And I take it just a little extra on that. But a lot of times if I see cattle or heavy roads, I'm off to the next place.
Yeah. And the one thing to note is with the recent imagery, you know, that the timestamps that you're seeing cattle, but again, with recent imagery, it's not as detailed. You're not going to see cattle on that imagery. The thing to note with that, cause that is a very, very good tip. But that imagery might be a year or two old
right
at that point. Right. So it's
right.
Like there's cattle grazing rights on this area. That's super good to know. And there's a good chance that there are cattle in there. But obviously that imagery is not real time, and ranchers move cattle around. So it's tough to know exactly where they're going to be at. But that is a very good tip. And especially those water holes, you know, you can tell just based on the trails leading down to a water hole, if it's getting used or if that water hole is full.
Yep. All right. So the other question I have is, let me think if now is the right time to ask this. Now I think I'll wait and ask it later. Okay. So we've kind of identified a little bit about some access points, some other things to look for as far as maybe there's cattle or other, non-hunting activity. Where do you, like, when you look at terrain, right? Obviously we can like use the 3D, we can zoom in and try to catch the terrain. But as far as how to read topography, I feel like that's a lost art in a way, because it is like, I don't know how many times when I first started using Onyx, I'll just drop down this hill. Well, that hill is a face and I'm not dropping down anything. And so I get to these points. Any tips or tricks or things people need to know about how to read terrain to make it like go and find game, but also know that you can get in or get. All right, guys, you know me and I love eating wild game, but I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef, and that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Get out of somewhere.
Yeah, it's a very good question. The best tip that I have might not be everyone's favorite answer, but I'll get to my second tip as well. But the best tip that I have is when you are out in country, whether you're hiking, preparing for your fall hunts, or you're actually out hunting, pay attention and study the topography around you while you're in it, because then that is going to give you so much more of a head start on saying, okay, I just hiked up this mountain and it was very steep and it was pretty nasty and I had to navigate some cliffs and whatever. Well, if I get to the top and I'm eating lunch and I'm sitting or listening to for bugles or whatever, and I pull up my app and I look at the topography of what I just hiked up, now I've got a mental understanding of what that topography looks like because I just was there on boots on the ground, right? Then moving forward, everything you look at, and I'm not saying you just do it one time and you'll have it figured out, right? But the more that you look at the topography that you're currently in and hiking in and navigating, the way easier it's going to become for you to look at topography across the country and be like, I've got a pretty good understanding of what that is, right? Because right. I've looked at stuff that I just hiked through and I know what that is. And this looks steeper, or it looks, you know, that drainage looks similar to one I did last year. Like a couple of mental ones stick out for me where we shot a couple of black bears in a drainage in Idaho once that it was like the nastiest, steepest drainage I've ever been in, it probably in my life. And I know what that area looks like on topography. And I've also since then found some other areas where I'm like, man, I don't know about pulling an elk out of this. This reminds me a lot of that country we shot those bears in, and we had a real tough time getting out of there. And so mentally that helps a ton. There's some other tips and tricks though. Like you mentioned, you can put the area in 3D. And so you can look at topography and then look at it in 3D. We also have 3D exaggeration to where you can, there's a slider bar and you can exaggerate that 3D up all the way until it's super cartoonish. But what I have found, especially in most places in the West, if I slide that 3D bar up maybe the quarter of the way or even a little bit less, if it's really really mountainous terrain, it gives me a lot more accurate representation of what the terrain actually is.
Right.
We've all done it before, whether it be in Onyx or Google or whatever, you look at something in 3D and you're like, oh, that doesn't look too bad. I can hike through this country, no problem. And then you get there and it becomes light and you're standing there looking up at this giant country going, holy cows, this is way bigger than I expected on the maps, right? It happens every time. And the 3D exaggeration, especially knowing that, and you slide it up a little bit, it gives you a lot more accurate representation of what that terrain actually is. So 3D exaggeration, the topography, we also have a really new feature that we're in the process of rolling out. It is currently on the web map, on the desktop, and will be in phones very soon, but LiDAR. So if you go into our base maps and you turn on LiDAR, it is pretty amazing looking at our topography base map with and without LiDAR. Yeah. LiDAR is going to show you if there's like a little cliff band around this mountain. Without LiDAR on, it just looks like another topo line. With LiDAR on, you can see little things like, hey, there's like a little cliff band here. We might have to navigate around that. Yep. So that's really helpful. And then the other one that I really think is vastly underutilized is our slope angle layer. So if you go into your layers and you turn on slope angle, it turns your map into a bunch of different colors. And at the top, we have a color gradient. So it'll say, I'm just going to do it here so I don't misspeak, but essentially it will tell you the steepness of that terrain, and you can really start to visualize and pinpoint like, hey, there's a bench here, or hey, this area that we thought we were going to hike up into is really, really steep and nasty. Have you used that slope angle layer much?
No, not a lot. I've kind of learned to read topo, so yep. I haven't really had the need for it. But knowing about it makes it sound a little bit more interesting, especially in some of those steeper elk type hunts.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, like, even with knowing how to read topo and having LiDAR, the slope angle layer, it will save you a lot because it really highlights things that a topo map just doesn't really show quite as good, right? Like we can figure out, okay, here's a good hiking route into this area. I can get up on the spine of the ridge and it benches out and looks really great up there.
Yep.
But you turn on that slope angle layer and certain other areas just pop that you might not be able to pick up with topo or LiDAR. So the slope angle layer, you know, green's going to be from like 5 to 10 degrees. You get into your yellows from like 15 to 20 ish, and then orange around 20 to 30, and then red and purple and blue. And for example, that drainage that we shot a couple bears in Idaho, like there was a lot of purple and blue in that particular drainage. So it was a lot of red. So we're talking 30 to 40 degree slopes. And then there's a lot of blue and purple that we're navigating through that was kind of hands and feet, like cliffy stuff.
Yeah.
So having been in that area and looked at that particular area with slope angle turned on, I now know if it's purple or blue, I don't really want to be in there unless I have to. I certainly don't want to pack an elk through any of that country because it's like nasty, steep,
brutal,
really puts into perspective. Because you can look at this and be like, oh, yeah, 40, 45 degree slope is very steep. But until you're in it and you got a pack on and you're sweating and you're trying to get out with a headlamp, like it really puts it into perspective for you. So this layer is super helpful for that as well, especially for folks that might not be really well versed on reading topography. Turning on the topo map with that particular layer and you'll learn quite a bit.
Yeah. What's that? Is it you guys? I think you guys have it where I can pick a point on, let's say I want to find a glassing knob where I can cover the most ground, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm on the side of the hill, obviously I can't see anything below me, but if I pick a point at the very top, it will highlight all of the faces that I can glass from that point. That's what you guys have, that, don't you?
Yep. So that's called ViewShed. It's within TerrainX on the web. So yeah. That is more of an e-scouting tool. It's not built into the phone app yet, but it is on the desktop. If you go to TerrainX, that's where you can look at the area on the map and you can say, okay, I want to see things between, 5,500 feet and 7,200 feet. And it will highlight that particular elevation band. You can say, I want to see things between 15 and 25 degree slopes. I want to see north facing stuff. And it'll highlight the areas that you are, the inputs that you are putting into it. So for e-scouting, it's a really handy tool. And then ViewShed, what you're talking about is baked within that. So click on ViewShed, wherever your mouse is on the map, it will highlight what you can visually see from that area. So you can use those two things combined to where it's like, okay, I just want to see things again from 5,500 feet to 7,200 feet and south facing slopes. So, potential feed areas. And then you use ViewShed and it will show you what you can glass that's within those parameters. Or honestly, how I like to do it is I like to open up all the parameters and just use ViewShed by itself, because anywhere that I can physically glass and see from that particular area, I want to see on the map. So it highlights those areas. It kind of grays out everything else. It's some pretty, pretty crazy technology. Honestly, the first time I saw that, I was pretty blown away.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, there is, for me, I found a huge use for that when I started, I went for the biggest valley, right? And I would sit at the end of the big valley and then all these other fingers that would go up, down. But then I would be like, oh, geez, I'm not seeing any deer. But what they were all in the cuts that, let's say the big valley ran north south, mm-hmm. but it was all the east west drainages where the deer were at. And so I assumed there's no deer there. Well, I shifted one day and I was like, I'm going to go over to the west side of this valley. I'm going to glass into the east side of the canyon. And of course, I started to see way more deer. And then I was like, okay, well, it would be cool if I had this. And then I had a buddy who reached out and they was like, dude, Onyx has that. And he kind of walked me through how to use it. And I'm just like, bingo. And now what you can do is you drop these pins and the glassable areas are highlighted, and the more surface area that you can see from a spot, the better. So I've really messed around with that quite a bit. And I think it's a good tool.
It is super helpful. And the tools and the data and everything is super awesome, but your like the connection to actually make that useful for you is like that boots on the ground, you in the field realizing like, hey, these deer are bedding in these east-west cuts, not the north-south drainage. Like, how do I use this tool in Onyx to be more effective now that I have that information? That's where it really ties it in, right? So it is still really helpful for e-scouting. It's also very helpful for after you get back from a hunt. You've got your waypoints and you're like, hey, I kept seeing deer in these areas and I marked it. I don't really understand why yet, but then you get home or laying, you know, in the back of your pickup or in your tent at night and you're like, what is the common denominator? I keep seeing deer in these areas. You look at things like topo and slope angle layer and water, you know, you're looking for different things and it's like, oh, those areas show, you know, maybe it's a water source or whatever that you didn't know was there, but you find it. And it's like, okay, that makes sense why I'm seeing more animals in this particular area. Now, if I leave to different country, I'm going to look for a similar water source. Or in your case, the east-west drainages where they're getting out of the sun. Maybe there's a little bit taller grass down in there. They feel safe. And I have like in the field, I have plotted all these data points and then I've looked at the map and I've understood the common denominator there and what I'm looking for. Now I'm going to replicate that into a different area. And I'm going to, you know, take that learning curve of, hey, I'm in a brand new area. I'm just going to glass everything for deer. And now I'm going to say, I'm going to go to that new area and just try and glass those east-west cuts that I see on the map here. Because if there's deer in the area midday, they should be in there. And it might just like, you know, shave a day or two off of that learning curve and allow you to hunt more areas and, you know, hopefully be more successful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When we are e-scouting from home, prepping for an area, what other things should we be looking for past access and good terrain?
I think it really boils down to the type of hunting that folks want to do. Again, if it's backpack hunting, how do I get more than a couple miles away from all the other pressure? So at that point, I would be marking trailheads around the area or main access points around the area with waypoints. And then I might tap on that waypoint. I might tap on that waypoint and go, okay, I want the area shape tool, not the area shape tool, the range radius tool. And I put a 2 mile buffer around each waypoint. So you can add a radius around waypoints. And I might go 2 miles around each waypoint of the main access points. That is going to show me the gaps in the middle that are more than 2 miles from the major trailheads in those areas. So that's where I'm going to focus on. And from there, I'm going to look at things of like, where's a good camp spot? Where's food? Where's water? Where the animal's likely to move throughout that country. But there's different tools depending on the type of hunt you want to do. If you want to car camp and cover as much country as possible, at that point, I'm going to be looking at topo and try to find ridge lines to where I can hike up on a ridge line and make, maybe it's a 5-8 mile loop and I'm kind of up on a ridge the entire time, or I might have to cross through a couple valleys and get up on the next ridge, but I'm covering a lot of country and I'm up high to where I can sit and glass and mark different glassing points throughout it, right? That's how I typically hunt mule deer in eastern Montana. So I find like, I will start by marking the ridge line. So I'll find the good looking ridges that are long drawn out ridges. And I will use our line tool and just like mark a line all the way down that ridge. And I'll look at them and figure out how they connect. And then based on the wind, I will then mark waypoints of like, hey, here's a good glassing point on this ridge system. Here's another one, maybe a mile down the ridge. Here's another one over here. So I can be effective with my time. And once I'm up on that ridge, I can just move quickly up and down the ridge to different glassing points on both sides, right? So I can glass whatever, the north side of the ridge, the south side of the ridge. And all I might have to do is walk 150 yards to glass completely different country. I'm not covering, you know, I'm not going from one glassing point to a mile back to the pickup, half a mile the other direction to glass up something else, right? I'm essentially just moving 100 yards. Now I'm glassing all new country and building a route there. So I think it's really tailored to the type of hunting that you want to do on what I do next, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Specifically, like in your opinion, what are some very specific imagery type things that you're looking for that are indicators of game being there?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it depends on if I'm elk hunting, deer hunting, or whatnot. But I, one of the things I look for imagery is, I call them wet spots. I'm not necessarily looking for water, right? Sometimes you can see water. I've found wallows in the bottom of a drainage on imagery before, right? So you can see water, you can tell, but areas based on the topography and then also the imagery that just appear to be greener than everything else, right? So with topography, you can look at the what should be a stream or a creek in the area, but until you get there, it might be dry and you don't know that. But if you look at the topography and you see, okay, there's a blue line indicating at the bottom of this drainage, indicating water. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the imagery and everything, all the open spots down that drainage are a more lush green than the hillsides. Like that is a good indicator to me that there actually is water in that particular area. So whether I need water for me, or obviously the animals that I'm pursuing are going to need water frequently, like that is a good indicator for me. So I'd say for imagery anyways, that's probably the number one thing I'm looking at is what on the ground, where does the grass look different than everywhere else and why? Like, is it a water source? Is it that area, that particular area is getting a lot more hill shade than everywhere else? And so that's one of the main things that I look for with imagery specifically.
Gotcha. Yeah, man, that's always tricky because that stuff changes, right? And like
every year.
And I can't believe how many times I've gotten like a pin from somebody and they send it to me and I check it out on, you know, on the map and they're like, oh God, this is beautiful back here. But then it's a big drought year and they go back and it's nothing like what they had explained. Yep. Of course, there's way less water in there as well. The other thing on the flip side of that I've kind of pulled away from some of this is, and I'm talking to a little bit of my South Dakota knowledge here, is a little water can hold a lot of animals.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about a big cattle tank. I'm talking about a mud hole. Yep. that just has a little bit of drinking water, but man, there's a lot of deer that can feed or animals that can feed off of that. And if it's let's say a dry mud hole creek bank, the one that I'm thinking about. So there's a little spot here and then another 200 yards is another little spot. And I mean like a cup full of water, a handful of water like that. And that can hold a lot of deer in some yep. of these areas.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of that, you know, it might be a natural spring that seeps back up and it's just always that full, right? There's a lot of water underneath the ground there, but it's just, it doesn't look like much. And you might hike by it being like, okay, where's the water source around here? But you just stepped in it.
Right.
Like it will continue to sustain what is in the area. And then also too, if there's water there, there's a good chance in the drainage over there, some water too, that might be a little better or worse, but I've also noticed that too, especially on dry years, like Eastern Montana, you can hike all day and not find water. And it's like, where the heck are, you know, how are these animals living in this area? Or even a cattle tank in the area. The cattle grazing on public land isn't always a bad thing. Cause I've definitely keyed in on different, water tanks on public or whatnot that a lot of elk use as well. So, keying in on all that stuff can be really helpful.
Yep. Let's talk about these roads. And I think this is the main contention for a lot of people. And I've had this conversation several times. And you mentioned something before we started recording about this, and I feel like it's important to share this. My biggest issue is knowing where I can and cannot drive.
Yep.
Or if I am on a map and it looks like I can drive there. And then I run into private road, no trespassing signs, knowing that people also put up no trespassing signs on public roads just to keep people out thinking that.
Yep.
What are the best tips to navigate roads and where you can and can't go?
The world moves fast. Your workday? even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/N365 Copilot.
Yeah, that's a great question. Honestly, that's the biggest hurdle, I will call it right now, with the data set that we are provided. That is just, that exists, right? Like, I won't even say that we are provided at Onyx. I will just say in general that exists out there in the wild. It's a problem that not just you face, I have personally faced. I've had several different conversations with landowners and fish, wildlife, and parks game wardens on, you know, is this accessible and not? And at Onyx, it's something we're constantly talking about and trying to improve. So do know that we are working to improve that data to provide more like, hey, this is a public road, this is a private road, or here's where that intersection stops. Right now, it is a challenge for every single person.
Yeah.
Couple things that I will say is if you go into the layers and you go to roads, trails, and rec within Onyx, if you turn on motorized roads and trails, that data set is going to give you the roads and trails that are more or less public, but it's not, that does not mean those are the only public roads, right? Those are the roads that we have the data for, whether it be on BLM, state land, national forest, that are like, hey, here's a county, whether it be county or state maintained road that you can access. It will highlight those in purple. Also, to take it one step further, if you tap on that road, you can pull up some more information about it. So you tap on it, it'll pull up that particular layer. This one in particular I'm looking at, it says it's accessible by overland, high clearance, 4x4, side-by-side, ATV, and dirt bike. It's a dirt road. It's open from 5/16 to 12/01, so it's not open year-round. And it's managed by the Bureau of Land Management, BLM. So that is more information about this particular road. I will say utilize that data set and that layer anytime you can, because it's really going to be helpful. If it's more of like a dotted road you tap on, it might just say, hey, this road is only accessible by ATV and dirt bike in these dates. So it's really helpful to figure out where I can go. And it's also very helpful to figure out where other folks might be. For example, if I want to do a backpack bivy style hunt and I hike 5 miles into this area, if I look at that road system and I tap on it and there's a dotted road, you know, that goes right above where I want to camp, and it says it's dirt bike accessible year round, I might rethink my strategy, right? I don't want to hike 5 miles into an area that somebody can just access with a dirt bike and hunt the exact same country, but not have to hike in 5 miles. So you can use it for a lot of different ways, both finding access and getting away from folks as well. That data set is very good. Outside of that is where it gets very tricky. We have an extensive road system database within Onyx. Like, you'll see road names, you'll see, okay, this one looks more of like a proper road, this one looks more like a two track, and here's the road number. What we don't have very good data for, and just because, again, it doesn't exist, is this road, quote, private or public? A lot of it, you kind of get the feel of if it looks like a main road and it accesses a whole bunch of country and goes through some private areas, but it looks like a main county road. More oftentimes than not, it's going to be a public road. But until you get there and are driving that road, sometimes you just don't know, unfortunately. Yeah. Couple things that I have done personally, like in Montana, there's a gas tax road database. So you can look up which roads are maintained with gas tax, like the tax on gas that I personally pay in Montana. There is a map that shows that. And more oftentimes than not, if that's a gas taxable road, that means it's public, right? Because the taxes that I pay are maintaining that road. Therefore, I can publicly access it. So that's one way. I have definitely, when e-scouting and not being sure, I've marked a waypoint, got coordinates of the road or where it transitions from public to private. And I've called a local game warden before with those coordinates and said, hey, you know, my name's so-and-so, also trying to create some rapport for them. Like, you're going to be out in their area. Maybe they'll give you insight on what the elk or deer are doing anyways. But it's like, hey, I've got a question. You might be able to help me out. If you can, excellent. If not, no worries. I understand. But I'm trying to figure out if this road at these coordinates becomes private, because maybe last year I was there and there was a private sign, like you said, but it didn't really feel like it felt like it should continue to be a public road. Like, I just wanted to call and ask you about this. A lot of times they don't know, but they will figure it out and call you back. And yeah, it's a tricky deal. And oftentimes you don't know until you get there.
Right. Okay. All right. It's a great tool, but it's not 100% the answer all the time for every question that you have. And I've had to do that before where I call, I've tried calling DOT. I've tried calling game wardens. I've tried calling, the BLM offices or grassland offices in the places that I go. And for the most part, they give me the answers that I want. It's just that what kind of trouble do I want to go through to get to some of these spots? Right. And if there's days where, I'm feeling a little frisky and I want to go down, I want to have that encounter with that landowner who is pissed that I'm on a public road that he's trying to keep private, then, I'll play that game. But then there's other times where I just don't want that, because it's just a waste of time, really, is what it is.
Yeah, it's just a negative interaction. And I've seen it both ways, I've personally been tried to be kept out of public land by other hunters, right?
Right.
Like, I've seen that where there's a really good piece of state and maybe a big buck is crossing through it every day and somebody knows that. And now all of a sudden there's a no trespassing sign on the corner of state land. And it's like, okay, well, I know I can access this. I've hunted it, I verified it. And then, you call local game wardens to go out there and take care of it and hopefully try and catch whoever's doing that. But I've seen it from both ways. And that's where just having the data on the phone and saved for offline, whether you have service or not service, accessible at your fingertips can really help save a hunt or an interaction. Sometimes I'm sure some of that is done inadvertently, and they might not be trying to keep people out of it. They think that it's a public or a private road there when it's not. And it's like, if you have that conversation with the game warden, you look at things like the gas tax road and the MBUM layer that we have, maybe it's an education point, right? It's like, hey, like, this is actually publicly accessible. The taxes in the area go on maintaining this road. And here's the game warden I called to verify my legality in going through it. Feel free to give him a call, Right. So I've had, really good conversations with folks as well, just kind of an education standpoint.
Yeah. And, if there is a rule and regulation that you feel might be a teeter totter, like it may negatively impact the landowner or the local or something like that, for the most part, I'm just going to avoid it and go a different direction. Totally. But if there, I'm getting accused for doing something that I know that I have the right to do, I even carry sometimes a printout copy of rules and regulations, and I can just highlight it. I go, dude, I printed this off the state website. Here's this. We can get the law involved if you want, but I haven't broken the law.
Yeah. So. Or even just tracks. A lot of times if I'm going through obscure areas that I know, like maybe it's a sliver of public land that gets me into a whole bunch of other public land, and I know I have to be within that sliver. Like, I understand as a landowner standpoint too, they might be looking and they see headlands bobbing through what looks like their field at night. And they're like, hey, like, they meet you at the pickup. Do you know where you're at? And it's like, absolutely. Like, here, I tracked myself coming out tonight. Like, I know there's a really thin sliver between those two sections of public land that you have to hit perfectly. Here's my track. And you show them exactly where you hiked, because that track shows exactly where you've been. It's like, see, I stayed on the BLM right to my pickup here, which is parked on BLM. And they're like, oh, awesome. Like, thank you for having this. Thank you for knowing where you're at. Thank you for not trespassing, and good luck. We've had really good interactions there, but I have intentionally tracked myself in areas where it's like, you're hugging a boundary and you know that the optics, somebody might have questions on if you were legal or not. You're legal. If you track yourself, you got proof.
That's a good point. So we're running up on time here, but is there anything else we need to know about any cool tools or updates or something that has happened recently with Onyx, or any tips or tricks or tactics about prepping for an upcoming hunt using digital mapping or e-scouting that you want to share today?
Yeah, I think the couple different thoughts. The biggest thing that folks underutilize with the maps is like all of the features. So many times, you know, whether it be at trade shows or I just talk to hunting buddies, they're like, you know, Onyx is great. I love it, but I just don't really use it very effectively. I don't use these features that we're talking about, right? I have always said for folks to like sit down for 20 minutes and tap every button in Onyx. You're not going to break it. If you get stuck, you can call customer service. They can get you unstuck. Like, but sit down, play with every feature, tap every button. You're going to have a lot better understanding of what it can do. And so you're not just looking at your GPS dot to figure out if you're in private or public. You can mark waypoints. You can add notes. You can take a photo of a water source and add it to a waypoint. You can share that waypoint with a buddy who's never been there. There's so many things you can do with an Onyx that most people don't utilize. So I would say like familiarize yourself with the mapping platform before you go use it. It's no different than a rifle or a bow, right? Mm-hmm. Probably shouldn't buy a rifle and a brand new scope a week before season and go shoot it twice and be like, oh yeah, I'm good to go. Like you should spend some time with it. It's a tool, and that tool can either be very valuable to you if you spend the time with it and learn it and understand it, or it can bite you in the butt and say, man, I shot at 100 yards this year, but that buck was at 325, and it's an expensive rifle, so it should be able to do it, right?
Right.
But you haven't like figured it out. So spend the time with the tool, get effective with it, and then you're going to be a lot more successful in the field, both in e-scouting and whatnot. But as far as the new features, we touched on LiDAR. That's a big one. We also have collaborative folders coming out soon. So essentially what that is, like if you and I were going on a hunt, instead of me marking waypoints and tracks and whatnot and sending those individually to you, texting them to you, I can put all of that information into a folder and say, here's our plan A for elk hunt Wyoming, and share that folder with you. And I can also make it collaborative to where you can add to that folder as well. So we have this one folder with data that we're going to go hunt together. I'm adding content to it, you're adding content to it, and it's showing up in each other's maps. So that's really helpful for scouting with a group, you know, or picking someone's brain. Like if I'm going to come out and hunt your neck of the woods and I've never been there, I might share a folder with you and be like, hey, here's what I'm thinking. And then you might drop a few waypoints in there and then let me know, be like, hey, I added a few waypoints, you know, check these out and here's why. So collaborative folders is a new one that's really, really cool as well. That and LiDAR is kind of the two new things for the year that are pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, Dylan, man, I really appreciate you taking time to have this conversation with us. It's definitely helpful for people who are new to hunting in general, whether it's in your backyard or clear across the country on a different species than what you're used to. I mean, I can't tell you how many hours in the past I have spent on digital maps, scoping out hunting properties, looking for access points, all that stuff. And so, you know, Onyx is a popular tool. It's a efficient and effective tool, and I use it quite a bit. So, thanks for the tips. Thanks for the info. And, I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the conversation, and, good luck this fall. Hopefully you have a wildly successful fall, and send me some pictures, and we'll stay in touch for sure.